question. I'm Sarah McAnulty. I run Skype a Scientist, and so I'll be moderating the Q&A today. We are in total nonprofit, completely donation driven. So if you appreciate the programming that you've seen over the last weeks and in the coming month, please help us help support us on patreon.com/skypeascientist or on paypal.me/skypeascientist. We are a nonprofit, so those donations are tax deductible. For the adults in the room. For kids, don't worry about what that means. You don't have to deal with it yet. Other than that, I think we're good to go. So Claire, if you want to introduce yourself, go for it.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining today. My name is Clara Bird. I'm currently a graduate student in the Geospatial Ecology of Marine Megafauna Lab at Oregon State University. We call it the GEM Lab for short, because it's a lot of words. Basically, we study how marine megafauna, or the bigger animals that live in the ocean, use the ocean and behave in the ocean and where they choose to live. I'm a first year studying gray whale behavioral ecologies with drones. So we go out in the field right off the coast of Oregon and we fly a drone and we go and we find gray whales. And in the summer, they're everywhere around where we are in Newport. And then when we see one, we'll collect the typical data, photo ID, we'll take pictures of them from the boat, and then we launch a drone and we film them. In a minute, I'll share my screen and show you guys some footage. And then I am gonna analyze years of video footage and try to understand their behavior and how it has changed, or what patterns we see over space and time, if there's individual behaviors that we see, if it varies by body condition and sex, and a whole lot of questions. On the list. I also have experience. I came from Duke University, where I was an undergrad and was a research tech using drones on humpbacks and minke whales and penguins in Antarctica. And I've gone there for field work. So you have questions about that, happy to answer those. And now I'm going to try to share my screen.
And for folks who need the ASL, make sure that you have the option to click. Let me take a look at this. The different options to look at the individuals. So when Clara is sharing her screen, click the different options for view and you'll still see Aaron.
I think I need screen share.
Oh, I need to be able to bump you up to a co-host. Sorry about that. One.
No worries. Yeah, but for today, you guys, I'm happy to answer questions about whales and drones, field work, life path, grad school, anything you want. Hit me. Okay. Oh, hang on one second.
You should be able to screen share now.
Do you guys see this video?
Yes.
Okay, great. So this is a little highlight reel from our most recent field season. And this was put together by the folks at OSU News. And so as you can see, we have a lot of different really cool behaviors and views of gray whales right off the coast of Oregon. We actually get a lot of data. This clip right here, we're collecting a fecal sample from the boat. So we also collect their poop and analyze different hormones and to get an idea of their another source of data about their health. And we actually did a lot of flights in over the summer. And you know, the footage is just amazing. So my job isn't quite that bad. We actually captured a whale breaching this summer, which was pretty incredible. And sometimes they exhibit these really crazy surface feeding behaviors, as you can see. And this is with thermal imagery, which was pretty exciting to see that edge detection work. And this clip I love because you see how wiggly whales are, which is connected.
Awesome.
Yeah. So with that, ask me any questions you have.
Great. Okay. So how many types of whales have you studied?
That's an interesting question. So right now I'm entirely focused on gray whales. At my old job, I guess I worked primarily on humpback whales and minke whales, but they're I would call myself more of an image analyst. So I worked a lot with the data, not so much with the biology side of the animals. I was just looking at photos and spent a lot more time working with manipulating spreadsheets than I did studying the whales. And I have looked at some blue whales and fin whales, but I would guess I would say three.
Cool. About how many whale types are there in total in the world?
Ooh, gosh, that is a question, a hard number I don't quite have for you. So I've only studied baleen whales, which are, well, most of the baleen whales you've probably seen images are the rorqual whales, like the humpbacks and the blue whales with those big pouches that when they lunge feed, you see that it balloons out when they engulf their prey. And so those, I think there's five or six kinds, and then there's gray whales or another type of baleen whale. And so there's those baleen whales, and then there's a lot of beaked whales, which are harder to study, but those would include things like sperm whales or the kubi, the more cryptic beaked whales. And those, there's a ton of those, are odontocetes. They have teeth. And those, I couldn't give you a hard number.
What does it mean when an animal is cryptic?
Cryptic, that's a great question. So these baleen whales that we have, they're foraging off the coast. And so while they're really hard to study because they're whales, they spend a lot of time underwater, they're foraging on the coast. Foraging means feeding. And so we can actually go out and find them pretty frequently, get a good amount of data. The cryptic whales, like the beaked whales, they spend a lot of time in the open ocean in deeper water. They dive really deep, which means that you can go out in the boat, but it can be really, really hard to find them at the surface, to know where they are, because they're not in these coastal areas as much.
Cool. What does it mean when a whale breaches?
Breaches, that's a great question. So a breach is when those photos or images you see of a whale, when it kind of flings itself out of the water and kind of does that really cool arching behavior, that's a breach.
Cool. Are gray whales endangered?
A good question. Gray whales, so there's currently two populations of gray whales we have in the Pacific Ocean. There's one off the coast of the Western United States, which is the Eastern Pacific population, and those gray whales are not endangered. They recovered from whaling really well, and we think that they're pretty close to the numbers of population that they had pre-whaling. But the population on the other side of the Pacific Ocean is really endangered and has really low numbers.
What's the most surprising thing that you've learned about whales?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. The most surprising thing that I've learned about whales. I think that with gray whales, I wasn't as familiar with them until I started grad school. And so the sheer number of different feeding behaviors that gray whales exhibit kind of surprised me, and the fact that one of my favorite things they do is they feed a lot off of the sea floor. So they'll kind of headstand, they'll dive, and then they go kind of parallel to the seafloor, and they suction food up from the seafloor, which a whale and that kind of maneuverability surprised me a lot. It's really cool to see.
Cool. How can you tell how old a gray whale is?
It's really tough. I guess our best way is if we see it as a calf and then we can kind of see it in later years, then we kind of know, we can get an estimate of when it was born. For other whales, that's a lot tougher. We can estimate their maturity. For example, if we see a mom with a calf, then we know that that mom is a mature whale. Other times we know their date of first sighting. So we on the West Coast are really lucky that we collect our data on these animals, but then there's the Cascadia Research Collective that has been collecting photo ID images, which is just those photos with a camera on a boat that people have been collecting for decades. And so we can actually match the whales that we see now to that catalog, and we know, okay, they were sighted 20 years ago. So we can get an estimate, but we still don't know when they were born. So that's really hard for us to do.
Cool. How long can a gray whale stay underwater?
That's a great question. I don't actually know the total answer to that. When I look at videos of them foraging, so I'll see them underwater can go and be headstanding and doing that foraging behavior for maybe 3-ish minutes I've seen in the footage. But yeah, I don't actually know the correct answer to that.
Cool. What's your favorite whale?
My favorite whale, I mean, right now I think it'd have to be gray whales, because I look at video of them every day, and I think that they're just really cool and beautiful.
How do gray whales communicate with each other?
Gray whale communication. Again, a great question I'm not an expert in, but like other, you know, with like other whales, they make their different sounds that we don't fully understand. Yeah, but they kind of sing or make similar vocalizations to the other whales.
When you're going out on boats to study whales, I know you're using drones a lot of the time, but mm-hmm. how long are you on the boat at any given time?
Another good question. So when I'm doing my field work now off the coast of Oregon, we can go out for a full day. So we try to leave around 8 a.m. and get back around 5. And so from the minute we're on the boat, we have our lunch. We eat our lunch while the boat is working. Sometimes you're holding the scientific instrument in one hand and your sandwich in the other. Yeah, so we'll go out for kind of a full work day on the boat. In Antarctica, I did kind of 3 hours at a time, but off the coast of Oregon, we'll go out as long as we can and just work constantly.
Cool. Do you ever find sick gray whales?
That's a good question. Sick is a tricky word. Whales that seem unhealthy for sure. We actually, during fieldwork, saw one that looked like it definitely had a huge injury on its fluke. We've seen whales that look like they have some fresh propeller strikes. We've seen whales that look really, really skinny. And so kind of from that, we assume or think that they're unhealthy. But yeah, so we've seen some pretty crazy things out there.
Yeah. So in addition to whales, you're probably seeing other animals too. What's the coolest animal that you've seen other than a whale using your drones?
The coolest animal I've seen other than a whale. I really like, in Antarctica, we've gotten footage of kind of these big groups of penguins kind of porpoising all together, which is just, I mean, from the side, it's still cool to see them kind of doing their little leaps across the water. But from the drone, it's seeing the vast quantity of penguins all together porpoising is pretty crazy.
So when you see the whales going down to the bottom and feeding along the bottom, first of all, how deep is that? And second of all, what are they getting out of that sediment? What are they eating?
Yeah. So depth, again, we're fortunate that gray whales are foraging so close to the coast that the water is shallow enough that we can still sort of see their fluke just below. Their fluke is their tail. We see it just below the surface and can kind of have an, that's how we think. And then when they come up, we see the sediment streaming from their mouth. And we're okay, it was foraging down there. So the depth probably, I mean, I guess it depends on the length of the whale, but maybe 15-ish meters-ish. Rough guesstimate.
Cool.
Yeah. And then they're eating primarily different kinds of crustaceans or amphipods that are down there in the sediment.
Cool. What's an amphipod?
An amphipod is a kind of crustacean. So crustaceans that you guys probably know of are crabs or shrimp, and amphipods are kind of smaller versions of those.
Cool. So when whales breach out of the water, why do they do that?
Another great question. We're not entirely sure. We think that it might be for something, maybe they're just having fun. Maybe they're just playing around. Cool. Yeah.
Sounds good. I heard from, I think humpback researchers that they, or maybe it was manta ray scientists were saying that some animals jump out of the water and like do a big belly flop to try to get some like parasites off of them. But I have no idea if whales are doing it for that reason. I just know
Maybe
you're doing it for that reason. I don't know. I study squid, but we pick up other little bits and pieces of information as we go. Next question. What does whale poop look like?
Whale poop, it's a little bit different for the different kinds of whales. It is mostly kind of a pinkish reddish shade, and it looks kind of dusty. It's very liquidy for the gray whales. It is very fine, which is actually hard for us because we want to collect kind of big chunks of their poop so that we can analyze it later in the lab. And so it's actually pretty funny if you were on the boat with us, when we see kind of a whale, when it goes for its dive and we see that cloud of pink in the water, we know it's poop, and if someone will yell poop, and then we go rushing towards it with our nets at the ready. And so, you know, you're leaning over the side of the Zodiac with your net in the water and kind of swishing it around and just hoping that you're getting some good chunks. And sometimes you lean really far to like, you see a really good chunk and you want to get it. So it kind of looks like really fine pinkish dirt.
Nice. And the Zodiac is your boat?
is our boat. Yeah. So it's a small, so if you looked at that video, it's that small inflatable.
Awesome.
Boat.
Cool. That sounds fun. All right. How can you tell the difference between a male and a female whale?
The best way that, well, we can know if we collect, kind of, we can, from their fecal sample or a biopsy sample, which is, we don't, right now we aren't doing biopsies on the gray whales, but biopsy samples are kind of when you get that sample of its skin and blubber. So we can look at its genetics. Or if we see a mom and a calf, we know that's a mom, so we know it's female. And otherwise, we're not entirely sure.
How can you tell the difference between individuals?
We use their markings. So you guys might have heard about humpback flukes being really unique. That's kind of a similar technique. And from the drone, we actually have a much bigger area to see, so we can kind of look at different scars they might have, markings, patterns of barnacles or of different coloration patterns, and their flukes as well. So we spend a lot of time staring at pictures of whales.
Nice. Do gray whales live in groups like orcas do?
Not really. Okay. They have their kind of bigger, you'll see them in aggregations, not necessarily, it's not a social group when they're in the breeding grounds by Mexico, but no, up on the coast when they're foraging, we tend to see them as individuals or mom and calf pairs. Sometimes there's a bunch kind of foraging the same area, but they're not kind of in a pod like an orca.
Okay. So you don't get those like family structures like you do with orcas?
No.
Cool. Do they migrate?
They do. Gray whales have one of the longest migrations of whales. So they will go, they primarily breed around Baja, Mexico every year, and then they come all the way up the coast of the United States. A lot of them will go up to the Bering and Chukchi Seas in the Arctic. So that's a long way to go up the coast of North America. But our whales, actually, they're called the Pacific Coast Feeding Group of gray whales, and they actually kind of just stop off the coast of Oregon, Washington, Northern California area, and they forage there. We're not entirely sure why. Maybe they just realized that there was food and they didn't have to swim as far for their food. But it's the same group of 200 to 300 whales that we see every summer that consistently, instead of doing the full migration, forage in our area.
Cool. Do gray whales have predators?
Yes. Well, for a long time, humans. And then, killer whales or orca whales are kind of one of their bigger predators.
Cool. What's your favorite part of your job?
My favorite part of my job? Like a lot of, I guess, whale biologists, I love field work. I love getting out to go and kind of see the whales and remember that a whale is more than just a thing moving in a video that I'm looking at for hours on end. But I actually also really enjoy the analysis part of my job. I have fun with kind of working with data and things. I think my favorite part is, since I have a kid, I've loved the ocean and asking questions. So every day I kind of get to pinch myself that I actually get to study the ocean full time.
That's awesome. It is a really cool job for sure. So when the whales are not like pulling food from the sediment, eating the amphipods and that kind of thing, what are they eating in the water column? Or what are they eating up in the water?
So when they're surface feeding, which is another kind of foraging that they do, they can be feeding on mysids, which you can kind of think of as similar to krill, and kind of different pelagic things. There have been reports that they'll eat small fish or different kinds of things. It's pretty cool. Their surface behavior kind of looks like I call it Pac-Manning. It's not a scientific term, but they literally just look like a Pac-Man just chomping away.
That's awesome. What's the most common animal that you see out there?
Whales, it was crazy to me when I got out to Oregon. I got in the field of just, you don't really expect to kind of get out of port and then see a whale, you know, right there. We see them all the time. You can see 20 whales in a day. It's kind of overwhelming at first to kind of keep track when you're used to, you know, spotting one whale and being grateful that you found the one. But yeah, we're extremely fortunate where we are that in the summer, they're just right there all around. We also see porpoises and harbor porpoises and fish and different kinds of things, but maybe it's just because what I'm looking for, but whales.
Awesome. So if you ever see a whale that's hurt in a way, like maybe it's tied up in fishing line or mm-hmm. something, do you ever help them or?
No. So we, our team that goes on the boat, we're not the entanglement team. We're not all fully trained to handle that. If we see it, we'll take pictures of it and record kind of where we saw it. And then we get back, we will let the entanglement team know, that there, we saw an entangled whale, let everyone know to keep an eye out and kind of just alert, the right people that we saw an entangled whale.
Cool. How long do whale calves, so babies, stay with their mom?
Whale calves, they are born in the breeding grounds and then they come up, they do the first migration up and they forage and they nurse for a couple months. And I think by August, we see that their moms are kind of post-weaning. And so they kind of will, our field season starts in June. So we'll see that mom and calves weaning, which is nursing in June and July. And then I think by kind of October, September, they've kind of gone off on their own.
Cool. Why do whales have blowholes?
To breathe. that is how, yeah. So when they're coming up to the surface, they kind of that blow that everyone sees, they're getting that water out and then they're breathing at the surface with their blowhole, which is, that's kind of one of their whales. Kind of, we go back through evolutionary time, started on land. And one of those adaptations that changed was their blowhole kind of shifted to your nose is on the front of your face and it moved to the top of their head.
Cool. Can whales get a cold and get a stuffed blowhole?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, we definitely get whale snot on us all the time, which gross. It's pretty gross. Does not smell good. It's not. But there's actually a cool group that they have created, a snot bot, which is a drone with kind of a petri dish attached. They fly through the blow of a whale and collect its snot.
Amy April's group or?
It might be, yeah.
Yeah,
which is super, which was just a super cool idea. So I don't know if they can get a cold, but they always have snot. I can tell you that much.
All snot all the time. That's great. can you describe for us a typical research day out on the boat?
Yeah. So like I said, our field season with my lab is from about June to mid-October. So basically we're also highly dependent on the weather. So if it's a bad weather day, we have no chance of going outside. So we go, but on a nice day, so kind of the night before, make the call if we're going to go out or not. And then if we have decided, then we'll go. We try to get out by 8 a.m., which means so we kind of have, get all our equipment together, get ready to go out on the boat. And then we get on the boat, go out at 8 a.m. And then from that first moment, like I said, sometimes we get out and we find a whale right away. If not, we'll kind of choose a direction to go in based on some information about where, I mean, where we saw whales recently, but kind of just pick a direction and go. And then when we see a whale, we'll kind of figure out what it's doing. If a whale is just traveling at a faster speed, that's kind of a sign that we're never really going to catch up to it or be able to do much. So maybe we'll let it go, find a good whale to work with. And then the first thing we want to do is we get those photo ID images, which are important just for continuing a catalog and knowing who it is. Then depending on, maybe if we see it poop right away, we'll go for that fecal sample first, work with it, get pictures of all sides. And then if the weather is good, whale is still there, we'll launch the drone, fly over it, and then kind of figure out what to do from there. Maybe collect poop samples while we're flying the drone, get more. And then we also collect photo ID images while the drone is in the air, which is really important because if we can match up that kind of video to the photo ID, then we know exactly who we have in the video. Yeah, and then we'll land the drone, see if there's other whales in the area. If we're finished with that whale, then we go and keep finding other whales, and kind of that's kind of our pattern for the whole day. It can get really tricky. Like I said, sometimes we find a group of six whales all foraging in the same area, and then it's a crazy game of yelling out which whale you're looking at. We'll give them kind of field names of that spots and that's scratchy, and you kind of try to keep track and kind of, there's someone writing down kind of the frame numbers or, you know, images 1 through 4 of whale 1, whale 2, and kind of trying to keep track. And it's very hectic.
Sounds fun.
Yeah.
Do you ever name your whales long-term?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, we match up our images to that Cascadia Collective catalog, but we have our own catalog within our lab of the whales that we've been working with. And we, once kind of that whale is confirmed to either be like a new whale, or we name them lots of things like Luna or Spots. Yeah, we can get a little bit creative with them.
Sounds good. What is the lifespan of a gray whale?
We don't actually have a great number on that. Probably, I would say kind of, oh geez, maybe 60, 80-ish, oldish. I don't have a great answer for you.
Sounds good. Sometimes we don't know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever seen do whale sharks live up where you're studying?
Mm-mm.
No, they live down in warmer water, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Never seen a whale shark. Have you seen a whale shark in general in your life?
I have not. I would love to.
But I've only seen them in aquaria. I've never seen them out in real life. One day.
One day.
How often do dolphins and whales interact?
That's a good question. I'm not sure of the frequency. I know that of kind of the different whales, humpbacks tend to be the one that we see the most interspecies behavior. So we've seen kind of humpbacks. I haven't, but seen reports of humpbacks kind of interacting with dolphins. Or humpbacks are interesting because they've actually been known to sometimes interfere with a killer whale predation event. So if they will kind of go in and protect a gray whale calf or seals on the ice, or actually kind of interfere, and we're not entirely sure why. Maybe they think that it might be another humpback and they're trying to help, or maybe they just know that gray whales are trying to be predators and interfere. We're not quite sure.
Wow. That's super cool. Do you ever like tag the whales and track them, or are you just observing from above?
Yeah. So my lab is not tagging the whales. We do kind of talk to other scientists who have tagged some gray whales to get some information about kind of that longer term tag data. I did my work in Antarctica. I did look at some drone footage of tagged minkies and humpbacks and things. So I have been involved in groups that kind of get that extra data source, but no, my group doesn't tag.
Cool. Are you ever worried about crashing the drone?
Oh yeah. Yes. That's a kind of background fear that's pretty constant, I would say. Especially in Antarctica, where when I went down, we had our one drone and that's what we had. So we were very cautious, but I would say that in those cases, we just choose to be safe rather than sorry. So if we think that the wind is going to pick up, or if it just doesn't look good, it's just not worth the risk of flying the drone. But yeah, I'm always somewhat concerned that it's going to drop into the ocean.
Yeah. So when you were younger, when did you know you wanted to be a whale scientist, and how did you get into this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I decided I wanted to study the ocean when I was 9. My mom is from Spain, and I grew up snorkeling in Spain in the summer and just loved it and would swim till my skin was wrinkled and my lips were blue. And then when I was 9, I was watching an episode of Nova on PBS, if anyone remembers that show. Big fan. And it was something related to the ocean. I don't even remember. And I saw someone talking and their name was Dr. something, and they studied the ocean. That's when I kind of had a realization that was a job. Freaked out, got really excited. And my parents told me, you know, you have to like go to school for a really long time and go to graduate school. And then 9-year-old me decided, yeah, I'm going to do that. But for a long time, I wasn't quite sure exactly what I wanted to study. For a while, I thought I would be more interested in maybe community ecology or something more tropical. I studied penguins in undergrad. Honestly, I kind of fell in love with different data analysis methods at first. And then, I mean, I've always been interested in whales and liked whales. And then through my job as a researcher, I kind of was part of Team Whale working on that data, and really enjoyed it and loved being able to apply this technology to a animal that's so hard to study. And there's so many cool questions to ask. So yeah, it's been big focus on marine science and then slowly been narrowing it down.
Cool. Have you ever been in the water swimming with a whale?
I have not. No. But from the Zodiac, dangerous. Those small boats, you feel really close. You're very close to the water. So that's thrilling enough for me.
Very cool. When you were in Spain, did you see whales?
I didn't. No. I was just in the Mediterranean, which, and on the coast, we don't really see many things all that big. So no, I spent a lot of time looking at starfish and octopus and little critters.
Cool. Do the whales ever get curious about your boat and come up to explore?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Actually, one of my favorite memories, the first kind of good field day that we had in Antarctica, we found two humpbacks and they actually circled us for like 15 minutes, went under the Zodiac, were just swimming around, checking us out, I guess, which was, yeah, it was crazy. So they definitely are curious about, just as curious about us as we are about them.
That's so fun. Do you ever put robots like underwater to watch the whales from underwater, or is it all from above?
Well, that's, I know some people have done work with kind of underwater robotics. In terms of the robotic side, we're all with the aerial drones. But we do, that's the other thing we do in the field. I forgot. When we see a whale that's kind of foraging around, we'll drop a GoPro in the water, just kind of attached to a weight, try to get it to hit the bottom. Because we're, one of the big questions is, so they have these different kinds of foraging behaviors, which is really unique and really cool. And we want to know if they're associated with different habitat types within the area. So with maybe a rocky bottom, kelp, sandy, muddy bottom, can we kind of see these patterns of why they're exhibiting these behaviors. And so we dropped the GoPro to get a look at what is at the bottom. And we actually have accidentally caught kind of a clip of quick second of the whale's head at the bottom, which was pretty exciting. So we aren't looking for the whale when we drop the GoPro, but we are looking underwater to kind of see what habitat it's in.
Sounds good. Do whales fart?
I don't know. Probably. They poop a lot.
Sounds good.
So, yeah.
What are the bumps on a whale's chin?
On a whale's chin? So on gray whales, the kind of white spots that you see on its face and all over its body are barnacles that grow on its skin. So that can be a combination of barnacles and lice and kind of all sorts of things that grow on the skin. So that's what the bumps are on gray whales and a lot of whales when you see those kind of white, harder looking things.
Cool. What new behaviors are you seeing in light of climate change?
Interesting. I don't know if I would say that we've seen like a totally new behavior. And we're actually, that's one of the questions, is seeing if the kind of pattern of behavior changes year by year, which is tricky because with whales and from previous studies where they were able to kind of watch whales in a bay foraging for a whole summer, we know that they kind of switch their behaviors normally, or kind of every year there might be a pattern that's not caused by, you know, climate change or something. That's just every year their pattern changes. We're hoping to maybe see some sort of, maybe there's a long-term pattern, but that is going to take a lot of years of data. And that would maybe be if climate change is changing the prey availability or what prey is more abundant, maybe that would be reflected in, we see more X type of behavior because of the kind of prey that's available.
Right. Is it dangerous to be in the boats around such a big animal?
Good question. No. Is, I guess, the answer sometimes when you know that it just went under your boat, you're definitely not feeling super calm at the time, because, and it's not that you think the whale is gonna like choose to surface or flip your boat, it could just be accidental. But it kind of always, as my experience has worked out. So no, it's not really dangerous, but you definitely have some moments where you're like, oh, that very large animal is coming right at my boat.
Yeah, that sounds a little scary, but really cool. So how big is this boat that you guys are on?
Yeah, so our Zodiac, I think, is about 6 to 8 meters long. What's that, like 20-ish feet, maybe?
Sure. Math.
Math.
20 feet?
20-ish feet, let's say. So it's not very big. We work in teams of usually 3 people on the boat, and that's kind of enough to be scooching around each other, and with all the different kind of equipment, boxes and crates that we have, can be tough to work. You kind of definitely, more people would not be good. And it's kind of, it's about, usually if you see kind of pictures of a boat next to the whale, about half the size of the whale or less.
Cool-ish. Do whales have ears?
They do. You just can't see them.
Cool. Sounds good. Has anyone on your team or you ever been like reaching for that poop and fallen over?
No, fortunately not. I've sometimes felt a little concerned, but usually most of your body is well within the Zodiac. I've definitely had times where my legs are braced on the far side of the boat and just fully extended. And your arms definitely can get very wet and you accidentally just submerge most of your arms in the water. But no one has fallen in yet. Hopefully never.
Nice. Can whales blink?
I don't know that.
I don't know either.
Maybe.
Cool. What's the smallest whale?
The smallest whale. The smallest baleen whale is a minke whale, which are really cool. I've worked on Antarctic minke whales, which are actually can be about the size of one of those boats, a little bit longer. And those are amazing. They're so different from kind of when we think about like the great whales, the humpbacks and the gray whales that are big. And this, the hump, I call minke whales like little torpedoes. They look like little torpedoes and they're so fast and they just like zip around, which can make them harder to study.
Yeah. Do you get seasick?
Fortunately, no. I was a little worried when I went to Antarctica and we crossed that Drake Passage, the infamous passage that everyone gets seasick. I felt a little bit woozy, but nothing extreme. I will say when we're on the Zodiac off of Oregon, and if it's a higher swell day than usual, so swell is kind of, if you've ever been on a boat, that kind of natural kind of when the boat is going up and down and moving around a lot. If the swell is higher, so the boat's moving around more, you don't get seasick when you're moving. But then when we collect a big net of whale poop, we have to wash it down into a jar. And at that time, you're sitting, staring at a net of poop, washing it into a jar, and you're very focused. And that, then I do get a little seasick, and you kind of have to take a break and lift your head and look around and then take a deep breath and get back to work. So
yeah,
typically no, but sometimes a little bit.
Nice. So when you have whales all around your boat, how do you prevent the whale from getting hit by the propeller?
So when we have whales around us, when we get close, we'll typically just put the boat in neutral or just turn it off. So even if, I don't think they would kind of bump, but if they did, the propeller's not moving, so they wouldn't get injured seriously.
That's good. Do some people still hunt whales?
Yeah. Not nearly as much as before. But there is some, they do allow some kind of hunting by different indigenous populations or Native American that do kind of subsistence hunting that they were doing before whaling. And that was never what was causing kind of the massive population decline of industrialized whaling. So yes. And under a lot of knowing different, we kind of before those permits are allowed, they really analyze the population health and if it is okay.
Cool. All right. Let me see. Sorry, we have a lot of repeat questions here. So what kinds of questions are you answering when you're out there?
Yeah. So I guess some of my 3 major questions are they using, so my big focus is on foraging behavior and their other behaviors, but mostly on their right now kind of focusing on foraging of different foraging behaviors. If that's associated with different habitat types across space, different areas, like I was saying, do they forage differently over kelp, over rocky bottom habitat type, muddy, different habitat type that is kind of might be associated with prey type. And then I'm also interested in time. So they're foraging throughout a season. So do they forage on different things throughout a season? Is there a pattern at all within a season across years? And then also looking at individualization. So do individual whales, since we know we've seen Luna every year, got footage for every year for every couple months maybe, does that one whale kind of prefer or indicate a preference for a different kind of prey? And then also looking at body condition. So if you guys have heard about the unusual mortality event of those gray whales that are washing up on shore, kind of the bigger die-offs than usual, a lot of reports say they're really skinny, if you've seen those. And so that, if we're looking at body condition, maybe do we see a relationship between body condition and health and their behavior? Could that kind of help us understand that? So a lot of different questions, but looking for patterns and behavior across different factors.
Sounds good. What's the biggest whale you've ever seen?
The biggest whale I've ever seen. Well, what's cool is that when you're on the boat and you see a whale, you know it's big, but until you see the drone footage of your little boat next to that big whale, it's hard to kind of understand how much of that whale is below the surface. I guess those two humpbacks that circled us in Antarctica were pretty big. They were definitely double or more the length of our Zodiac. But you had no idea until you saw the pictures.
Cool. Why do you guys always use Zodiacs?
Other teams don't necessarily use Zodiacs, but all the work I've done has been from a Zodiac. They're small, so it's kind of easily maneuverable, close to the water. So if you're on kind of a taller boat, it'd be really hard to get that net in the water to collect the fecal, so that poop sample. In Antarctica, we use them because you can deploy them from kind of the bigger ship that you're on. They can be dropped into the water pretty easily. And then they're also fast, so you can get around and just zip around on your boat. But cool. Other people use other boats, but yeah.
Awesome. So we try to keep these to 45 minutes. So we're getting to the end here. So we have two final questions for you. One, what do you wish everybody in the world knew about your field of study? And the second question is, what do you wish everybody in the world knew about literally anything? Just like one thing you wish everybody knew.
Ooh, okay. About my field of study. Well, I kind of alluded to this before, but like over 90% or more of my job involves staring at a computer. So it's not all the pictures that you see of people studying whales are typically of them on a boat in the ocean looking at really cool whales, which is amazing. And I love that part of my job. But a lot of our time, we're just looking at video, different kinds of data in the lab, kind of inside indoors, looking at the data, which initially I think can sound kind of boring or not as fun as what the job might seem. But I actually think it's really cool to have that time because you're on the boat and you're seeing the whale, which is amazing. But then you also have a million questions in your head and you can't actually answer any of them until you spend that time inside. And so for me, the kind of thrill of when that analysis finishes running or I see that kind of see it results after a couple months is as you get that kind of same adrenaline that you get when you see a whale on the boat. And then one thing about anything, I guess to anyone who wants to be a scientist, my biggest thing is if you're worried about having to give up some other in the future, if you love art or performing or being creative and you're worried that you're gonna have to give that up to be a scientist, that is absolutely not true. Being creative is just as important as kind of studying science. I was and am a big theater nerd, will proudly say that any day of the week. So just keep being creative, because I actually had a great mentor who said that kind of activating that artistic side of your brain makes you a better scientist. So don't ever think that you have to give up kind of some other activity that you love because you want to be a scientist.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks and sharing
all your awesome knowledge. Erin, thank you for signing. As always, we always really, really appreciate that. Again, we are meeting tomorrow to talk about primate biology, I believe. We're really excited to hear about that. I don't remember what time off the top of my head, but you can always look it up at skypeascientist.com, click events, and then Skype a Scientist Live. Our whole schedule's up there. If you appreciate what you've been seeing, please support our work at patreon.com/skypeascientist, or directly just give us a one-time donation, which we also super appreciate, at paypal.me/skypeascientist. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
Bye, guys.